Hello, and welcome to our DAC Beechcroft NHS Estates podcast, where we discuss the latest issues and developments in the management and disposal of NHS land and property. I'm Terry, and an associate in the health property team, and I'm joined by Stan, who's a partner and leads our health property team. Hi, Stan.
Hi there, Terry. It's great to be here.
Today, we're going to talk about freehold disposals and how to comply with Section 4 of the Estate Code, and also look at some other top tips when disposing of land and buildings. This is an important topic, as the NHS has a duty to use its assets efficiently and effectively and to generate income from surplus property that can be reinvested in improving services and facilities for patients and staff. So Stan, can you tell us what are the main principles and steps that NHS bodies should follow when they decide to sell their freehold land and property?
Yeah, absolutely, Terry. So the Estate Code outlines a comprehensive and detailed process the trust should follow to ensure that their disposals are lawful, transparent, and achieve value for money. The first step is to identify surplus property regularly and report at least annually to the board. This means the trust should have a clear and up-to-date understanding of their property portfolio and its current and future use. Surplus property is defined as property that is not required for the delivery of healthcare services, either now or in the foreseeable future, and that does not generate any income for the benefit of the NHS trust. A top tip on understanding your estate is that you can get a PN1 search, or a search for the proprietor's names register, from the land registry. And this will show you everything that is registered to the trust. We have a tool that can do this instantly and at no cost for you if you're interested in finding out. We also recommend that you search against historic names too to make sure that nothing gets missed.
Thanks, Dan. So once the trust has identified a property as surplus, what should they do next?
So the next step is to verify the legal interest and ensure that the property is registered to the NHS Trust in its current name. This is to avoid any disputes or delays in the disposal process and to confirm that the Trust has the legal authority to sell the property. The Trust should also check if the property needs to be returned to the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care as part of the PCT Estates Transfer Scheme. If so, there would be a restriction registered on title from 2013. If the PCT Estates Transfer Scheme applies, then the property may need to be transferred to the Secretary of State or its nominee if it's no longer required for healthcare use.
I see. And then what's the next step?
So the next step would be to notify nearby NHS organisations, NHS Property Services, providers of NHS services and local authorities of the surplus property through the EPIMS register and allow 6 weeks to 2 months for a purchaser to emerge before placing the property on the open market. The EPIMS register is an online database that records all of the land and property owned and occupied by the public sector in England and that allows public sector bodies to share information and identify opportunities for collaboration or rationalisation of their property assets. By notifying other public sector bodies of the surplus property, the trust gives them the chance to express their interest in buying the property for ongoing health or public sector use, which can be preferable to selling the land to a private developer or investor.
But what if the property is not required for public use? Does the trust have to offer it back to the former owners?
That's a good question, Terry. In some cases, yes, the trust may need to offer the land and property back to the former owners under the Critical Down rules. These are rules that apply to land and property that was acquired by the government by compulsory purchase or under a threat of compulsory purchase, and that is no longer required for the purpose for which it was acquired. In these cases, the former owners or their successors have a right of first refusal to buy back the land and property at the current market value, unless there are exceptional circumstances that justify a different approach. The trust should check the history and title of the property to see if the Critical Down rules apply, and if so, contact the former owners and offer them the opportunity to buy the property within a reasonable time frame.
That sounds fair. So the trust has considered other public sector bodies and former owners. What would be the next step?
So once you've gone through those steps, surplus property should be sold as soon as possible, unless there are unusual circumstances preventing this, and land should not be retained in anticipation of market improvement. This is to avoid holding costs such as maintenance, security and rates, and to release capital that can be reinvested into the NHS. Where it's not possible to secure an early sale, the trust should consider how to obtain income from the property, which may assist in reducing holding costs during the disposal process. For example, the trust could lease or license the property to a third party or use it for temporary or interim purposes such as storage or parking.
That makes sense. But how does the trust decide on the best way to sell the property? What factors should they consider?
Well, Terry, there's loads of factors the trust needs to consider when deciding on the best way to sell the property. The most important factor is that the trust should support the disposal decision with a robust business case, including a cost-benefit analysis of the disposal options. The business case should demonstrate how the disposal will achieve value for money, meet the trust's objectives, and comply with relevant policies and regulations. The business case should also consider the risks and opportunities associated with the disposal, such as market conditions, the planning status of the land, environmental issues, legal implications, and stakeholder interests. If enabling works are required, then it should be clear that these works will be paid for by the proceeds of sale and make the sale worthwhile to the trust.
That sounds like a lot of work. How can the trust ensure that they have the right expertise and support to carry out the disposal process?
Well, that's a very important point, Terry, and that's where we come in. The trust should not attempt to carry out the disposal process on their own unless they have the necessary skills and experience in-house. The trust should appoint a disposal team consisting of external advisors such as surveyors, solicitors, agents and consultants who can provide professional advice and guidance on the disposal process. The trust should manage that disposal team effectively by setting clear objectives, roles and responsibilities and by monitoring and reviewing the performance regularly. The trust should also keep records of all matters relating to the disposal, including details such as the date the property became surplus, the name of the selling agent, dates when offers were received and when the sale was completed.
That sounds like good practice. Can we talk about some of the specific issues and challenges that the trust may face when disposing of their freehold land and property?
Sure, hear me.
What about planning?
So the trust should consider the planning status and potential of the property and whether to seek planning permission or sell the property subject to planning permission or subject to overage. You've got the choice of the two, really.
And decommissioning?
So yes, the trust should ensure that the property is decommissioned safely and securely and that any hazardous materials or equipment are removed or disposed of properly.
Okay, and what about contamination?
Yeah, that leads into that question, doesn't it? So yes, the trust should investigate the environmental condition of the property and whether there are any contamination or remediation issues that may affect the value or liability of the property.
How about the structure of the transaction?
Yeah, there's a few things to consider here too. Have you got any thoughts?
What about overage or clawback?
Yes. So part of that, selling for best value, means that the trust should consider whether to include a provision in the sale contract that allows it to share in the future increase in the value of the property, such as if planning permission is granted or the property is redeveloped.
What about sites that are only partially surplus?
Yeah, that can cause issues, especially if the part that is surplus isn't easy to access or develop. So the trust should consider how to dispose of those types of site and whether to retain or sell their interest in the remaining part of the site at the same time.
Could the trust consider joint ventures with neighbours?
Yes, absolutely. Again, if the site is difficult to sell or difficult to develop as it is, then considering a joint venture with a neighbouring landowner, such as another NHS organisation or a local authority, may well increase the value or attractiveness of the property.
Is a sale and leaseback worth considering?
Yeah, you don't see so many of these, but the trust should definitely consider whether to sell the property and lease it back from the buyer, which may allow it to continue using the property for a period of time or to reduce their capital expenditure or debt.
And what about the provision of new facilities in exchange for surplus land and property?
Yes, again, not very common because of the procurement law overlay here, but the trust should definitely consider whether, subject to procurement law advice, selling the property in exchange for the provision of new or improved healthcare facilities may allow it to meet its healthcare needs without incurring capital costs.
Okay, and what about the timing of the disposal?
The trust should consider whether to sell the property subject to the buyer obtaining planning permission, which may allow it to achieve a higher price and also avoid the cost and risk of seeking planning permission itself. It should be noted, though, that when you do this, this will delay the proceeds of sale because it will take longer for the buyer to achieve the planning permission.
And could the trust phase the disposal?
Yeah, this is a good one, particularly with larger sites as well. So the trust should consider whether selling the property in phases may allow it to benefit changes in market conditions or retain some control over the development of the property as well.
What about setting the sale price?
So there's several different ways that this can be done. And the trust should consider whether to set a fixed price, a minimum price, a guide price or a reserve price, depending on the method of sale and the market conditions. And your professional advisors will be able to help you with that.
And can the trust sell to a selected purchaser?
Yes, the trust can consider selling to a selected purchaser without advertising or inviting bids from other parties, if it will allow it to achieve a quick and certain sale or meet specific objectives, such as selling to another NHS organisation or a provider of NHS services.
Does the trust have to sell at the best price?
So the trust should consider whether to sell the property at the best price that can be reasonably obtained, which is generally the duty for public sector bodies, or whether to accept a lower price for a good reason, such as to facilitate the delivery of healthcare services, or to comply with a policy or regulation.
And what about methods of sale?
So the trust should consider the different methods of sale available to it, such as private treaty, tender, auction, or online, and choose the one that is most suitable for the property and the market conditions at the time.
What about the timing of receipt of proceeds of sale?
Yeah, this comes up a lot. So if necessary, to avoid losing the receipt at the end of a financial year, the trust can specify that a transaction cannot complete in, say, the last 3 months of the financial year, so that it has time to receive and spend that capital. And a lot of these issues, as I mentioned previously, are the domain of your professional advisors, who will be able to advise you on the best course of action, depending on the details of the specific project.
That's a lot of issues and challenges. It sounds like disposing of freehold land and property is not a simple or straightforward process for trusts. Do you have any other tips or suggestions for trusts who are considering land disposals?
I do, and they fall broadly into two categories. Firstly, involve your lawyers as early as possible in the process. Let us have a look at your title to identify any constraints on disposal or development as soon as possible, and to avoid disappointment when something comes out of the woodwork later than it otherwise would have done. Also, get us involved in the heads of terms process. After all, it's us who's going to have to draft the documents that flow from them. I have a couple of times recently seen terms for conditional contracts, which are tantamount to option agreements. If an option agreement is the right document, then let's just put an option agreement in place and save the legal fees on drafting complex conditional contracts. The other is in relation to overage, and there's two points here. So don't be tempted to water down overage obligations or waive them entirely. I've been involved with transactions over the years where a DV has said there's no point getting overage or no point getting it on a greenfield site, only for the developer to obtain planning permission on that greenfield site or on that land, and the trust to lose out on an additional proceeds of sale. Also, if you're going to impose overage, make it clear to the buyer that this isn't just anti-embarrassment, it's intended to bite, and you're not going to allow it to be watered down through the contract negotiation process.
Thanks, Dan. That's really helpful, and I'm sure our listeners have learned a lot from this podcast. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to the NHS Estates podcast. We hope you enjoyed the episode, and we look forward to bringing you more insights and updates on NHS land and property management in the future. Goodbye.
Bye.